Welcome to the International Falls Age to Age History Walks. These walking history tours combine documented facts with remembrances of local residents. They were created as part of the Age to Age program of the Northland Foundation and dedicated to bringing generations together to enhance their communities through a variety of projects. Walk north on 8th Avenue to 2nd Street.
The city's first true hospital stood at the southeast corner of 2nd Street and 8th Avenue, just behind the current Bandshell. It was a three-story building with broad porches and a mansard roof. The Northern Minnesota Hospital was built by Doctors Elizabeth and George Monahan and completed about the same time as the courthouse. The first floor held doctors' offices, the kitchen, nurses' quarters. The second had surgery and obstetrics. The third floor provided nursing to the elderly. There were no elevators, and it was heated with wood. It served for nearly 40 years as a major hospital in the area. The First Falls Memorial Hospital was built in 1948, just a couple of blocks from the Northern Minnesota Hospital. It was a brick building at 800 2nd Street, a two-story structure. It was deemed very modern, though there were no elevators, no handicap access, and bathrooms and rooms were shared. Many hundreds of children were born here at the end of the baby boom. The site is now fenced in storage for PCA Corporation. This building was superseded by a new facility on the western edge of town, presently the Rainy Lake Medical Center, and newly refurbished a consolidated clinic on Shorewood Drive was abandoned when a new clinic, now part of the Essentia Health System, was built on Keenan Drive.
Walk east on 2nd Street to 7th Avenue, in the middle of the park.
The Irving Peterson Bandshell is named after a longtime band instructor at Falls High School. City band concerts were held there for decades. Today, a concert is held each Wednesday evening throughout the summer. The Art Deco structure houses warming rooms for ice skaters.
Walk to 6th Avenue, head south to the alley on your left, walk around the PCA building, across the parking lot, and back to 2nd Street.
The office building at 2nd Street and 4th Avenue, with its steep stair and columned entrance, represents the remnants of the original brick design of the Minnesota and Ontario Paper Company. Still used as offices for the paper plant, the building once housed offices of the various utilities within holdings of mill founder E.W. Backus. Residents would enter the hall to pay bills. For years after World War II, most families in the Falls had only one car. In the 1950s, a line would form in front of the mill as mothers still in curlers and multiple children still in pajamas brought husbands and fathers to work early in the morning, then drove on with the family's one car for that day's errands.
Walk to the north end of 2nd Avenue. Don't cross the rail tracks or enter into the shadow of the United States Customs and Immigration Building.
Look to your right and you will see the head of the Rainy River. The water is flowing toward you. The river you see drains 10,000 square miles of lakes and river to the east, including most of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness and the Quetico Superior Provincial Park. It was just in front of you that, for thousands of years, the river took a sudden natural dive of over 20 feet over granite bedrock. This was Kuchiching Falls, and the source of the name International Falls, because the far shore is another country, Canada. The waterfall known as Kuchiching was dammed in 1909 to create hydroelectric energy to power paper mills, sawmills, and grain milling, as well as the homes of local residents. The dam is located just to the west of the bridge. The Rainy River continues on westward to Lake of the Woods and then northward to Lake Winnipeg and beyond to Hudson's Bay. Native peoples for millennia knew the great transportation advantages of being located here in the heart of the continent, with watersheds draining to the east to the Great Lakes, south to the Gulf of Mexico, and north to Hudson's Bay. They taught fur traders their routes. Later, European settlers utilized the lake and water systems. Steam was introduced in the late 1800s. Steamboat traffic plied Rainy Lake and River into the early 1900s. Where you are standing is the location of the first business district of what was called Coochiching. A fire in 1903 destroyed the village. The new town was moved back from the riverbank and rechristened International Falls. A city dock was located just east of the International Bridge to Canada. Ferry boats once took people across the river to the other shore and the city of Fort Frances. Another ferry boat landing lay below the falls on the western edge of Fort Frances, serving river traffic. The bridge you see was opened in 1912 with a parade of dignitaries and citizens from both sides of the border. Today, the steamboats that brought settlers to the region are gone. The heyday of commercial fishing is long gone. The national park maintains a tour boat at a visitor center 10 miles to the east. Thousands of visitors come every year to boat and fish on Rainy River and the surrounding lakes.
Walk south to the far eastern end of 3rd Street. Stand in front of the International Falls Chamber of Commerce and Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Look past, behind, the building to the left and the right. You can see the tracks of Minnesota, Dakota, and Western Railway, which is one of the companies set up to serve the paper mills in the early 1900s when the first train arrived in 1910. A young farm boy yelled, "Throw me a rope and I'll tie her down." He had never seen a train before. The trains, in fact, had to be backed into the station as this was the end of the line. The river and Canada didn't give enough room to turn around. Today, you can see the partial roundhouse. Passenger trains were intermixed with trains serving the mills and the towns. The tracks led from here to the south and west, through the Muskeg Swamps to Bemidji. The passenger train, with hard seats or sleeper berths, were sometimes known as the Muskeg Zephyr, would rock back and forth as it made its way, splashing up swamp water as it hit low spots. Service to the Twin Cities demanded overnight travel. Many businessmen in sleeper cars got a night's rest before starting their new day in downtown Minneapolis. In late summer, families would take the Blueberry Train that would stop at people's favorite picking grounds, and then, at the day's end, pick them up again. There was singing on the way south and exhausted silence and full blueberry baskets on the way home. Even in winter, engineers would stop along the route to deliver packages to farmhouses along the tracks. The chamber building you are looking at was the depot station for the railway. Go inside and see the waiting room and benches where people waited for their train. This is the second depot building to stand at this location.
Start walking down 3rd Street. Many of the buildings mentioned are no longer around, but some are.
At the northeast corner of 3rd Street and 3rd Avenue stands a small square building that was once part of a service station run by the world-famous football legend Bronco Nagurski. It was said that he was so extraordinarily strong that he created return customers simply because no other service station workers could unscrew the gas caps he had secured on the cars he serviced. Bronco's was one of over half a dozen fueling stations in the downtown. They sprang up with growing popularity of cars after World War II. It wasn't always that way. Some of the first automobiles arrived by flatbed rail cars, as there were no easily passable roads in Coochiching County until the 1920s. Car ownership increased as roads were built. The Rochers were one of the first families to own a car. The Frasers ordered a roadster that arrived on a flatbed rail car. Unfortunately, it had not been tied down well and had rolled back and forth on the flatbed, and was shorter at the end of the journey than at the beginning. The Shaw family would take day trips to Bemidji, expecting to have one or more flat tires along the way. Mr. Shaw would refill the Model T's overheated radiator with bog water. The family took along a lunch, as the 120-mile trip took 6 hours on roads teeming with frost bumps.
Third Street was paved around 1920 with tailings from a Rainy Lake gold mine. Ripley's, believe it or not, claimed it was the only street in the world literally paved with gold. Even today, it is the natural route of teenagers cruising the town. It served for many decades as the commercial and social hub of the community. In the 1950s, two groups of teens brought their disagreements to the street in a pitched battle that was reportedly subdued by police with water from fire hoses. Third Street has been the location of 4th of July parades since at least 1903, when Spanish-American War veteran Dr. Withrow led the parade on horseback. In winter, when streets are plowed, large piles of snow are created at every intersection before being carted away.
School-age jobs included delivering the big city morning papers and the local afternoon daily newspaper. The paper boys, and some girls, watched the typesetters create the pages and get them loaded on the big presses at the Daily Journal building at 217 3rd Street, which burned in the 1980s. Next door was the cigar smoke-filled Rizzo Shoe Shop, where other news was exchanged.
Looking up and down the main thoroughfare of downtown International Falls, one could have once seen a dozen restaurants. Two of the most distinguished were the Dutch Room at 201 3rd Street and the Chicago Cafe, remarkable for its Art Deco interior, at 328 3rd Street. The Chicago was a place to go for a hamburger lunch, or before a game, or after a show, for French fries and a Coke. You could plug your jukebox in at your own control console at your table. Tiny red-haired Maude Revel might have been your brusque waitress. In the 1930s, you could order French pea soup at Frenchie's Hamburgers at 420 3rd Street. The King Joy in 1940s served Chinese cuisine. After a quick meal in the 1950s, you could catch the bus out of town at Made Right on Main Street. In the 1960s, the bus stopped outside the Rex Hotel's cafe at 3rd and 3rd. The Grand Hotel housed traveling sales crews and those visiting on business. The building was lost to a fire in 1982. Giovanni's Pizza was built there, and now Sammy's Pizza. Youth hung out at the Huddle during these years, though parents were not always happy about it. Pizza did not enter the town till the 1950s, when they were still called tomato pies. By the 1960s, the Rexall Drug Soda Fountain took over from the McCormick's as a place to get a frozen treat. Pearson's Bakery at 423rd Street supplied well-loved donuts and muffins, as well as remarkable tomato soup. By the 1970s, Bridgman's was a place to go for ice cream, including their famous Lollapalooza sundaes, for which patrons got a pin if they finished one by themselves.
First National Bank, 344 3rd Street. Through a side entry on Main Street, a very long stairway leads up to the second story, where various doctors and dentists, including Doctors Hanover and Menifee, housed their practices. Patients had to have good legs and lungs to attend an appointment. Of course, house calls were still common when doctors such as Withrow, Cantwell, Craig, and Hanover maintained downtown offices. Each office had basic examination facilities. The consolidation of offices resulted in economies of equipment. As you walk along 3rd Street, look up at the second floors of some of the older buildings. These once housed apartment dwellers as well as small businesses. Only a few apartments remain. One often related house call involved a trip by Dr. Craig down Rainy River to the Black River, where a woman with acute appendicitis lay in agony. A makeshift cot was created, and the woman was transported across the frozen river to a Canadian rail line. She was brought to Fort Frances, Ontario, and then across to International Falls, where she was successfully operated on. She was said to have walked 30 miles back to her farm a few days later.
Today, two major supermarkets provide the area with grocery needs, along with convenience stores and large box retail chains. During the last century, the community was served by a few large grocers in downtown and scores of corner stores. The Minnesota and Ontario Paper Company's company store was located at 416 3rd Street. The building was originally a movie house and later a Red Owl store, and now the home of the local Masonic Lodge. Mill workers were allowed to charge. In 1917, the city council permitted a city market at 3rd Street and 5th Avenue under the direction of the Kuchiching Township Farmers Club. Besides garden goods, future delivery was arranged for potatoes, poultry, dressed meat, and wood.
You can get a flavor for what the local corner grocers were like by stepping into the brick building at 444 3rd Street, now a coffee shop cafe. Here, the Rauscher family, for many decades, ran a general store and tobacco distributorship. Meats were a specialty. Patrons told the butcher how many they needed to serve, and the meat was cut and wrapped in paper. Wrapping string hung from the ceiling. Poles were used to get groceries down from tall shelves. Neighborhood stores were often a single-family operation, meeting customer needs from milk at 12 cents a quart in the 1930s to cheeses wrapped in white paper. Various languages were spoken and traditional foods prepared. Stores often offered credit accounts, and families settled up on their next payday at work. Store owners were known to help families in need during hard times. Some of the many stores included Reuters, Nagurski's, Park, Holland's, Plimling's, Bement's, the Airport Cafe, Brown's Corner, and Erickson's in Rainier. Butcher Brown had a sausage factory next to the Red and White store at 7th Street and 8th Avenue, where goods arrived in bulk. Flour, sugar, eggs, pickles in a barrel, raisins, nuts, vinegar in a barrel, brown sugar, and bananas by the branch. Children would frequent the corner stores, often in the middle of the day, for penny candy. Kids would collect empty soda pop bottles and bring them to the store, collect the deposit money and pay for candy, or more 5-cent pop. In the 1960s, Piggly Wiggly used to recognize every new mother with a basket of fruit. The advent of supermarkets led to the disappearance of the personal touch along with corner stores. Today, some families even drive out of town to large box stores to do most of their shopping.
The movies have captured imaginations from the early 1920s. Two major show halls were in operation by the 1940s. The Border Theater, part of the Art Deco structure at 437 3rd Street, and down the street, the Grand Theater, now used as the Union Hall at 509 3rd Street. Saturday matinees entertained generations. In the 1930s, there were dog races on screens, with prizes if one had a winning number. News of the world was followed by serials like Naomi, the Jungle Woman. Onstage traveling acts performed vaudeville routines like Lash LaRue, who did cowboy tricks with a whip.
Now, finish your walk by heading down 3rd Street to the Falls Public Library. And thank you for taking our walking tour. Thank you to Falls High School speech team members, Rebecca Salo, David Griffith, Kaylee Lothian, and Gavia Yunt, who lent their voices to this Age to Age project.